Hey guys, before we get stuck into today's episode, I want to thank the sponsor of the Fitness and Lifestyle podcast, and that is Unify Health Supplements. Unify have the most premium, high-quality, science-backed products on the market in Australia today, and you guys can use the code TFLP to save 10% off your next order at unifyactive.com. Unify has a range of products including whey protein isolate, plant-based protein, a pre-workout, creatine monohydrate, and their best-selling product, the hydration formula. So again, use that code TFLP to save 10% at unifyactive.com.
I'm Brianna Throssell, two-time Olympian and current world record holder in the 4x200 freestyle relay. Welcome to the Fitness and Lifestyle podcast.
Welcome to the Fitness and Lifestyle podcast. I'm your host, Danny Kennedy, and I'm here to help you become the very best version of yourself. Brianna, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
Absolute pleasure. After a few little technical difficulties here, we're about to dive in. How has your day been so far? Obviously, before we hit record, you were mentioning how heavy the training load is at the moment. I'm sure the listeners would be absolutely gobsmacked to hear about it. So what's your morning look like so far?
So it's been a busy morning so far. The alarm went off at 5 a.m. and then I was up and to the pool, and I started my day with, we just do about 15, 20 minutes of yoga before we get in the pool, just to, we came off a really, really hard day of training yesterday. So we do yoga to sort of lengthen ourselves and just relax before getting in the pool. And then we swam 6 kilometers, and then I was in the gym for an hour, and now I'm here on the recording.
Beautiful. So you were mentioning before how you're in pre-season at the moment, obviously in the lead up to Paris in 2024, which is super exciting. And we'll dive into more about that throughout the chat today. But when you say pre-season, can you give us an idea of what that training load looks like at the moment? And I guess how that differs from when you're in different training blocks in the lead up to a competition, whether it's the games or obviously you got the World Championships coming up as well, which will probably be a little bit different in terms of prep this time around, considering it's before the games. But yeah, are you able to give us an idea of what a typical pre-season day or week looks like for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think pre-season's sort of our really heavy load of the season. It's where we get a lot of, as our coach likes to call it, meat and potatoes work done. The volumes are really high in the pool, and it's also the volume outside of the pool that's a lot higher. So at the moment we have almost 5 circuits a week, 2 runs, 2 bike sessions, about 3 or 4 core sessions, a Pilates, 2 yoga. So yeah, there's a lot of work that goes in. And 3 gym sessions as well. There's a lot of work that goes in outside of the pool itself. And then in the water, we're training 9 sessions a week, and our volume in the water is a bit higher as well. So I'm sitting up at about 6 kilometers each session. So yeah, the week's really solid. I probably spent over 8 hours.
I reckon I've spent about 6 kilometers total my whole life.
So I think yesterday we almost spent 8 hours at training. So yeah, they're big days, that's for sure. And then sort of when we get really into like the nitty gritty part of the season, our training's a lot more performance based. So the session sort of, let's say Wednesday, Friday morning, where we have single days, so like only the morning, those sessions are a lot more sort of aerobic and recovery based, and we're expected to perform on our like main session days. So that becomes really important to be hitting goal times, to be being able to push, and be really speedy in training and that sort of thing. And outside of the pool, we do still have our three gym sessions and Pilates, but our sort of circuits and our land-based exercise is heavily, heavily reduced, just to sort of, lighten the load. And so we're coming into like those main sets a lot fresher and being able to hit those goal times.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess with the land-based stuff, obviously, being a swimmer, your actual performance is in the pool. How much do you find the land-based training aids in improving in the pool? And is it purely just to be getting some form of conditioning outside of just swimming all the time? Or what benefits do you see from, let's say, doing running sessions? Or where's the most benefit for you when we talk about things like being in the gym and lifting weights and stuff? what type of movements or training do you really feel has that crossover to when you get in the pool?
Yeah, I think land-based work is so important for swimming. You know, you can only do a certain amount of kilometers on the shoulders in a week sort of thing. So we do need that additional sort of aerobic training, which is why we're running and we're on the bike. I'm probably the world's worst runner. I did a 5K on Tuesday night and my heart rate got to 203. So it's something that really doesn't come naturally to me.
Hate to use the obvious shit joke here, but I'm going to say fish out of water.
Yeah. I'm just like, and that's the other thing is I'm just not good on land. Like, you know, I guess my plyometrics is okay because I am a bit more on the sprinty side in the pool, but I can't run. Like, probably the gym is something I have always tried to like work really hard in because, you know, muscle gain doesn't come that naturally to me. So yeah, the land-based activities I find really challenging, but I know that they're so beneficial to swimming, in particular, like the core sessions. Like, people probably don't quite understand that swimming is so core focused. Like, you need such a strong and stable core to be able to swim, especially with butterfly when it's, like the kick is like quite like a rhythmic kick, which stems from your core. So yeah, like that is of such high importance. And then, you know, the bike and the running is just aerobic conditioning. I personally find that running really helps my kick. You know, it strengthens my hip flexors, that sort of thing. So I see great benefits there. And then gym is, we always will have gym 3 times a week all year round, no matter what sort of stage of the season, although the gym will look very different. Like at the moment we're just, AMRAPs, everything's as many reps as possible, and it's tough, but I think because we're doing so much cardio, we want to keep muscle on, so everything's AMRAPs, but that's all right. And for me, gym doesn't come naturally, but it's something I'm really working on and have been for the past few years, because being like a bit more of a shorter to middle distance, we need a lot of strength. So gym is of high importance.
What's the nutrition side look for you in terms of calorie intake? Is that something that you're tracking? Obviously, the amount of energy output that you would be doing is extreme. And we often hear about, you know, the calorie intake of certain swimmers when they're in their kind of peak training periods and whatnot. Can you give us an idea of how many calories you're having to consume, I guess, to even maintain weight, let alone trying to retain muscle mass as well?
So I wear both like a Whoop and a Apple Watch. So I really enjoy data, and I was having a look last night and I personally burnt over 4,000 calories in training yesterday. So it's a lot. And the other thing that's quite difficult is when we're training for 8 hours, fueling's quite hard. Like, I didn't get home from morning training until 11 a.m. So, and that whole morning I had like a protein like a Carmen's protein bar before I went to training, and I didn't eat until 11, and I had like a big bowl of oats and that sort of thing, and like high protein yogurt because protein is very important. And then like we sleep for an hour, and then we typically have a really small lunch because we're going to be back in the pool and like all back doing a circuit in an hour's time. So fueling around training can be quite difficult when we're in like a period of such long training sessions. So that's when the importance of like intra-training fueling comes in. So I have only just actually started taking gels during training, because I ended up being on, when I got in the off season, which was only 2 weeks, I got into running a little bit, and I ended up on running TikTok. And I just noticed that these girls were going for a 15K run, it's like an hour and a half or whatever it may be, and they were taking 2 gels with them. I'm like, I'll swim for 2 hours, I'll do gym for an hour, and I'll do another circuit, and I will not have anything except water and electrolytes. I was like, I probably need to improve my intra-training fueling. So yeah, at the moment I'm having like Coda gels, which has like 30 grams of carbs in it, to like try to replenish those stores, and also like a sports drink, which has both electrolytes and carbohydrates in it to keep on replenishing during training. But yeah, it's hard when, you know, you say you're doing really hard training, you don't really feel like stomaching kind of like a gel sort of thing. But like, I know for me, I just have to force it down, because like that's the only way you can get through training. And I've noticed a huge difference personally in by adding in those little things like the gels and just getting that carbohydrates in. So that's something I'm really working on this season and have only kind of just started in the past few weeks when I realized that, I need to probably focus on getting some more fuel in. Otherwise, I'm not going to make it to the end of the session. And then obviously we have a really, really big dinner. Not that big, because coming off a run with my heart rate's 203, I can't really say I feel like much before going to bed, but I know that it's of high importance. So yeah, all my meals are very protein focused to try and keep the muscle on or even gain muscle during this sort of pre-season. But sort of my theory and philosophy around nutrition is everything in moderation. Like, I'll admit I have the biggest sweet tooth in the world. I love my sweets. I love my chocolate, and it's something I'll never cut out. Sorry. But and I just believe in everything in moderation.
Brilliant. Yeah. No, I couldn't agree more. I think it's super interesting to hear about the nutrition side. I think, I think for a lot of the audience, obviously majority of the time they're focused on nutrition. Obviously, I dare say not one of the audience is an Olympic swimmer. So a lot of the time their focus on nutrition is purely around the body composition. And I even mentioned to a lot of my clients the importance of, even if your goal is body composition, if you can start to look at nutrition more so for fuel and understanding the role that plays with your training and even just your energy levels and mood and whatnot throughout the day, it can make a significant difference. What does the nutrition look like for you on competition day? Obviously, I'm assuming it would differ depending on what time your event is, but do you have like a ritual or a bit of a superstition around certain meals before you race, or how far out from getting in the pool do you have your last meal, and what does that look like?
I'm a bit of a creature of habit, to be honest. And I guess with swimming, we're quite lucky that, you know, typically it's always heats in the morning, always finals at night. So we know exactly how our day is going to go. Yes, the time of heats and the time of finals will vary, like within reason, but, you know, that's always how the day is going to look. So I guess for, 10 years, 12 years being on the senior team, I know that I'm going to get up and have my oats and my yogurt and my high protein granola and my peanut butter for my breakfast. And that will probably be about two and a half hours out from, say, heats. And then I probably won't really have much more food until post-race. I'll sip on some electrolytes. Maybe I'll have, I am big on these, little packets of sour raisins. And I just know that that's really, really quick fuel. Obviously, they're quite high GI, so, quickly absorbed. Maybe a little packet of raisins. And then, we race. And then I try to get fuel in immediately. Some sort of carb, protein sort of thing, start recovering, something pretty small, because I know that when I go, say, back to the hotel for lunch, I'll have a good lunch then. And then it'll be another little snack and probably a coffee 2 hours out from finals. And then, post race again, we just try to get a little bit of fuel in. And then, a big dinner. But I guess with swimming, my races last a minute to 2 minutes. So we're not, expending a lot of energy as such. We're not going out and running 10 kilometers or our races are very short. So fueling is important, but I would say nutrition and fueling around training is so much more important than sort of when it comes to race day, because it's just kind of a normal day of what we have practiced with training.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, the volume is significantly different. One last question, because I want to kind of take things back a little in a second, and we'll touch on the competition side again soon. But the last question around this is, in training, how often are you trying to swim your competition time or close to your competition time? Is that something that is a regular occurrence weekly, or is it purely based off how you're tapering your training and periodizing to only be making an effort for that type of speed semi-regularly? Or I'm just curious as to how that looks.
Yeah, my short answer is almost never. In a really highly, highly specific period, I'm going to say 2 to 3 weeks out from Olympics or Olympic trials, we might do, let's say, 100 butterfly best effort. So that would probably be the only time that I...
Yep.
replicate race distance and try to replicate race pace for the whole distance. Whereas I guess our training more looks like, okay, we're going to go 650s and you need to hold X amount of time. Or we're going to go 825s, dive, best effort, like as fast as you can go, which hopefully is race speed or faster, but it's only for 25 minutes. So, yeah, I guess our training looks different to how we actually race, just to build that, build fatigue, understand what race pace feels like without actually like a race. So, like, let's say a 200 freestyle, for example, we might just go 450s at race pace as such. So kind of what you want to hold for the 200, but you don't actually do the 200. You have a break after each 50.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it's interesting. I was just curious because I'd never really spoken too much to any real competitive swimmers around that, because I'm assuming it's probably different from depending on which event. Like, would someone doing, say, a much longer distance, would they be kind of replicating their race pace more often when they're in training? Because I'm assuming like the actual training sessions and the structure and the style and whatnot would differ quite drastically between, say, a longer distance swim in comparison to more of a sprint.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess our longest distance is the 1500. They travel at a slower speed than what you'd swim for 100 meters, obviously. So I guess they can probably hit that 1500 pace a lot more easier in training than what you can 100 meter pace. So they probably do, I wouldn't say replicate their race as such, but they can probably swim a lot more at the pace they need to hit, because it is that bit of a slower pace because it's such a lot further distance.
Yeah. I mean, this is just, I'm curious about this. So knowing that your distance is obviously much shorter than that, and hearing the amount of volume that you're doing in the pool, and also obviously it's pre-season, but the amount of work you're doing outside of the pool as well, how does that correlate to someone who's then doing, say, the 1500 meters? Like, are they doing a similar amount of volume just at different paces than what you're doing? Or what does that look like in comparison from a sprinter to someone who's doing more of an endurance-based event?
Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like the squad I'm in, like my training group as such, no one really goes above sort of the 800 meter freestyle. So everyone follows a very similar structure. So on land at the moment, we're all the same. We all do the same land work. I mean, gym's quite specific to, you know, our, like, tailored to our needs and our strengths and what we're working on. But in terms of the circuits and the running and the bike, everyone's the same. It's just the volume in the pool is different. So like the sprinters might be sitting at about 5K, middle distance at 6, and then distance at 7 or 8 kilometers. So they do travel, like, over a week, they're probably traveling 10 to 12 kilometers further than me.
Okay. Yeah. Makes sense. I guess coming all the way back to when you were growing up. So you grew up in WA. When did you, I guess, first know that competitive swimming was something that you wanted to pursue, I guess, moving into adulthood and making it something that you make a career out of? Like, how early were you doing competitive swimming, and was it something that, I guess, ran in the family, or was there friends that were interested in it? Like, what really, I guess, was the catalyst for you to go all in with this?
That's an interesting question. I've swum my whole life, and I think for me, I just loved it when I was young. Yeah, I was probably, I started off with, like, learned to swim as a really young girl. And then I guess my parents sort of thought, you know, water safety is really important. Being in Australia, we have a very, like, water-based culture with the beaches and pools and that sort of thing. So I learned to swim at a very young age, and I loved it. And then I wanted to just, like, do squad swimming, like, 2 or 3 times a week when I was 7 or 8. And it was just a really, really natural progression. Like, it was just, like, typically a love for the sport that made me want to do it, I guess. And then, like, as I became a little bit older, I realized, like, okay, like, I'm okay at this. I was at school and I was winning school races, that sort of thing. And I started just to take it a little bit more seriously. And then I went to my first age nationals at the age of 12. And yeah, like I didn't perform that well. It was like, I guess, my first nationals. But then the following year when I was 13, I came home with a few medals and I sort of made my first, you know, junior Australian team. And I was like, oh, wow, this is exciting. And then each year from there, I took it like that little bit more seriously. But for me, I think the penny really dropped in 2012. I was 16 and I went to my first like senior nationals, so like open, so for anyone. And I made the 100 butterfly final and I was 16 and I qualified last in lane 8. And I mean, like there was like Jess Shipper, Stephanie Rice, like an incredible caliber in that race. And I was like, wow, like two of these girls from this race are going to be picked on the Olympic team this year. And I think for me, I was like, you know what? I want to be on the team in 4 years time. So from 2012 to 2016 was when I was really like, okay, I know what I want to do. I want to qualify for Rio in 2016. So that was really when the penny dropped for me that I wanted to pursue this as a full-time career, I guess. And yeah, 2016, I made the team. And then, yeah, again in 2021. And I'd love to go for my third next year.
Incredible. That's amazing. So you've obviously then made the move you were saying before we hit record. You've made the move a couple of years ago from WA up to Queensland. Now, something that I think it's evident in anyone who's successful in regardless of whether it's an athlete or someone in business or any areas of life is the ability to be able to adapt to new environments or new circumstances or new variables, whether it be within training and in competition or whether it's just in life in general. So how has that, I guess, change been for you? Obviously moving away from family, being in a completely different environment. How did you find that whole process of, I guess, just shifting your whole life from one side of the country to the other?
Yeah, that's a good question. When I first moved, to be honest, I hadn't planned on leaving WA. It was just a bit of a situation occurred where the coach that I was swimming under got the job on the Sunshine Coast. And I don't know if you know swimming in WA, but it's not very strong. So there was about 12 of us swimming under this one guy and he was the only really, really good coach in WA. So the 12 of us really had no option. So I think it took swimming, like it almost took 6 months to get a new coach in after like my coach left. So we all sort of, all 12 of us packed up and followed him to the Sunshine Coast. And it was a great decision. I'm so happy I went and so happy. Yeah. I followed him and, I mean, I guess moving, it was the first time I lived out of home, which was a huge, shock.
Huge.
But knowing that like the 12 of us moved together to a new city where I don't think a single person had been before, like I'd never been to the Sunshine Coast. So we had each other. And unfortunately, that time WA was locked up like Fort Knox, so there was no one going in or going out. So I couldn't get home for Christmas that year. But the 12 of us had each other, so it was actually like, yeah, a really pleasant experience. And then for me, I did decide that I'm probably towards the end of my career, and I just wanted a change. Like I had been under that coach for 6 or 7 years, and I was like, oh, I just want to change and give it one last crack for my last few years. So I then I moved to Dean in Brisbane, who coaches Ariane Titmus, the girl who won 2 and 4 at the Olympics. So and that was a big change, but it's incredible. Like I probably never thought I could push my body and my mind as far as I have. I'm really excited for the season ahead, but yeah, like you said, like the people you surround yourself with is kind of a reflection of you. And we had 10 of us make the senior team this year. And I think 10 out of the 10 brought home medals.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
From World Championship. So I think that just goes to show, I don't think it's ever, it was the record, we set the record this year for the most amount of people from one club on a senior team, which was amazing. And then I think every single one of us brought home medals. So just to be surrounded by the most incredible athletes, the most incredible coach and support staff every single day, day in, day out is just something that like words can't describe.
That's amazing. It sounds like you're in a really good space, obviously physically, but mentally as well. How important is that? How important is it to have that relationship or the connection with a coach in something like swimming, obviously spending so much time around them and whatnot? Obviously, from a professional standpoint, they need to be in a position that's going to allow you to grow and improve. But is that something that you, I guess, consider? I'm sure it was a big consideration when you changed coaches, but how important is that relationship with the coach?
I think it's very important for me. I would say that communication is key to a lot of things in life. And I think having that, that really good working relationship with your coach, where I know I have ultimate faith and trust in him and he has the same in me, is just like, that's something that is required. And I think being able to just openly communicate with him is, something that's, really important. Like, I think for me on Wednesday night, he texts me before my final exam saying, or my final uni exam ever, saying, good luck. And then I told him I finished 8 p.m. and at 8:01, he called me, how was it? Congratulations. And I just think like a coach that's so invested and cares about you is so, so important. And, he cares about us outside of the pool as well, to call me and say, congratulations for finishing your degree. That is, that's just something that's so meaningful and so thoughtful. So I just think having that, open communication is so important.
Yeah, it's incredible. It sounds like he really cares about you as a person, not just as an athlete, which obviously goes a long way. And I think it allows you to completely buy in as well, both obviously mentally and physically, but having the actual will to push yourself in competition and outside of it to continue to be able to, I guess, reward his efforts by continuing to improve as well. I'm curious to ask you what the feeling was like inside winning an Olympic gold.
I guess I could describe it as bittersweet because I didn't actually stand on the podium. I was the heat swimmer for the relay that won gold. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to even call myself an Olympic gold medalist. And like with that came like OAM. So I'm technically, my title is Brianna Throssell OAM, but it's something that I probably don't throw around everywhere because I guess I didn't stand on that podium and receive the gold with the girls. I myself and I think one or two others did just swim the heat. So, and I mean, heat swimmers always get the medal. It's like, always happens, but it's hard to sort of be like, I'm an Olympic gold medalist. And it's like, but I only swam the heat of that relay. So it's probably something that like I wouldn't really call myself on a day-to-day basis. I would say like I'm a two-time Olympian rather than an Olympic gold medalist, just because the girls in that final of that, I think, it was the 4x1 medley relay, like they are Olympic gold medalists, whereas I just swam the heat. So it's a tough one to say, but I mean, at the end of the day, I did bring home a gold medal, and obviously it's such an honor to win a gold for Australia, especially when swimming, so like everyone loves the swimming at the Olympics. So I think to come home with a gold is something really special. And to do it in green and gold is amazing.
Does that play into, I guess, what your main driving factor is throughout training and leading into competition? Like what's the ultimate for you? What's the thing that really drives you, particularly when, you can't be fucked with training anymore, or it's been a long day, or it's getting difficult in the pool? What is that one thing that really drives you that you have that actual emotional attachment to that is what you're striving for?
It's probably the qualification of the Olympics, which is the driving factor. I think for me, like sort of my 100 butterfly is probably my highest importance of getting on the team. But I also know that there's two or three girls just snapping it. Like Emma and I have sort of been number one, maybe number two in the 100 butterfly, but there's a whole lot of girls snapping at our heels. So I know that, come Olympic trials, I need to have my best foot forward. So For me, that's sort of my motivation every day, knowing that these girls are improving. I also need to improve. So, just knowing that, and I mean, it's in June. It's not that long away. So it's not like it's, you know, we're 3 years out from the Olympics. The Olympics is next year. So for me, that's my motivation.
That's a driving factor. That's awesome. I think obviously as an athlete, the lucky ones get to experience really high levels of success, but with success along the way also comes a lot of, I don't know if failure is the right word, but setbacks as well. How do you deal with those setbacks mentally, in terms of, do you have a process that you work through? Are you someone who deals with it quite well? I'm interested to hear what that's like for you throughout your career when there has been setbacks. How do you deal with it?
To be honest, touch wood, my career has been fairly smooth sailing. I haven't really come across any major injuries that have been setbacks, or like I've sort of been on the team every year. It's not like I've missed the team or, you know, missed out on a medal sort of thing. So I think for me, I've been really lucky. That being said, there's always disappointment. Like, disappointment comes with everything. Everyone wants to be a perfectionist. So I guess my performance in Tokyo, I was a little bit disappointed with, like at the Olympics. I mean, yes, I came home with the gold, but for me personally, I believe I could have achieved more. And I'm not really someone who dwells on it too much. I'm like, okay, look, that wasn't ideal. I guess the question is like, what went wrong? How do I improve that? And what am I going to do sort of to change it? So, for me, it actually meant stepping away from the 200 butterfly. Bloody hate the race. Don't ever want to do it again. So too far. Don't like training for it. Don't like racing it. So a bit of a mental block. So I sort of said to myself, I'm an older athlete now. The training for the 200 fly, I don't think my body's going to hold up. So I put that in a little box and I said, right, I'm putting my focus on the 100 fly and the 200 freestyle for the relay. So, I guess I made changes and I was like, okay, well, with the 100 butterfly, it means I need to be stronger. I need to be more explosive, that sort of thing. So I guess I just made these small changes because I knew that the 200 butterfly just wasn't going to work for me anymore.
Yeah. Looked at it practically. I like that. Was there someone growing up that you, I guess, idolized as a swimmer, or it may have been an athlete, or could be someone completely outside of the sport that you looked to for inspiration or motivation, or that you took, inspiration from when we think about, you know, achieving levels of success or just being a good person in general?
For me, I've always sort of, I'm quite a, I guess an independent person where I've been like, I want to write sort of my own story and I don't really want to follow in anyone's footsteps. I think that's kind of always been my theory. In that being said, I do like idolize Stephanie Rice. Her performance in 2008 at the Beijing Olympics was like the most outstanding thing ever. And with the few sort of interactions that I've had with her, she has been so down to earth, so realistic. And she's someone that I just, really have a really good sort of, I understand where she's coming from. So I think, I idolized her when I was younger. And then now that I've gotten to know her just a little bit, I'm like, I really like her as a person.
Something that I always like asking guests on the show is typically separate to their sport or their business or whatever they're, successful in, but it can also have some form of attachment to it. What's something at the moment that I guess you feel like you're working on as a person, like whether it be a vulnerability or whether it be something that you see as, I don't know if weakness is the right word, but something that you have the self-awareness around that you are really trying to improve on as a person or that you feel, I guess, vulnerable about that you've identified?
Oh, tough question. I think for me, it would be overthinking. Probably stems from things in my early sort of swimming career with a really old coach that I had who probably typically like to play mind games. And I think from that, I've only sort of realized in like the past, let's say 2 years, that a lot of overthinking has stemmed from that. And it's, I guess it's overthinking in the way if someone says, hey, Bree, like, do you mind just giving me a call? Or do you mind, like, let's say it's in school and they're like, do you think you could just meet with me tomorrow? I would panic. Like, I'd be like, oh my God, what have I done wrong?
Yeah.
I'm a good kid. I don't misbehave. Like, I was never like one of the naughty kids. So for me, like, overthinking has been something have really tried to work on and am still working on. And I mean, that's in all facets of life. Whether it is, how someone, you know, if someone speaks to me in a bit of a different tone, I'm like, oh, what have I done wrong? They're angry at me. Whereas like they could just be tired and having a bad day. Like, so I think for me, really working on not overthinking as much, which I know I have improved on so like dramatically, but it's still something that, I take into consideration a lot and still try to improve.
Yeah. I think what I've found with overthinking in particular, and whether it's with myself or whether it's with clients I work with on mindset or even within the fitness space, I think it typically comes, well, this is what I've found anyway, comes from almost like either an insecurity or a projection of like what we're kind of an assumption that we're making from like with inside. And we put that assumption onto the situation that we're in, as you said before, whether it's someone saying, can you give me a call about so-and-so, or can we meet tomorrow? I need to talk to you. And instantly we make these assumptions and we turn this very small thing into some big event mentally, or we create all this stress and anxiety around something that was just never there.
Yeah.
So we create these almost these issues for ourselves sometimes. I had earlier this year, I was super, super fortunate to chat with Peter Krohn on the podcast. I don't know if you've ever seen or heard any of his content before. No. I'll send you a link to some of his stuff after this, because he works with a bunch of athletes around like psychological time and understanding that when we're psychologically in the present, then there's really no anxiety, there's no depression, there's no stress, because we're right here and now. And if I think about myself right here now talking to you, there's immediately absolutely nothing that I should be stressed or worried about, because I'm sitting here just having a nice conversation with you. Whereas when we feel this stress or anxiety, it's typically when we're psychologically living like in this future event that we're creating in our own head, or when we feel this feeling of sadness or depression, it's usually psychologically living back in the past. And once you start to really understand that psychological time and how much that plays into like what we feel, it makes such a big difference.
Yeah, 100% agree. And I just think like that's the thing, you just need to focus on what's happening right here, right now. And the other thing is like what you can control. Like, I can't control what someone needs to say to me when they call me, and what's the point in worrying about what they're going to say? Like, I need to focus on whatever it may be that I'm doing right now, whatever I have to do in the next few hours sort of thing, rather than a call that might come through tomorrow to tell me about whatever it may be, which hopefully is good.
Yeah. Yeah, I think as well, it's almost, I can't remember who said this, it might have been either Gary V or Alex Hormozy or someone, but it was said something along the lines of like, a lot of the stuff we worry about in the end of the day really doesn't matter anyway, right? So it's like, well, even if it is something that's causing us stress or anxiety, it's like, will this matter next week? Will this matter in 3 months? Will this matter in a year's time? And if it doesn't, then it's not worth putting our time and attention to now. And again, it's just this story we tell ourselves, which creates this psychological stress or anxiety around all these things that really just don't matter that much.
Yeah.
Exactly. And when you have that perspective, I think it allows you to really just step away from things and calm down realistically.
Yeah.
Obviously as a swimmer, as an athlete, it's a challenging thing, right? Every day turning up to training, you're pushing yourself in every way possible, mentally and physically. Recently, you have just finished up or graduated with your business degree. Am I correct?
Yes. Yeah, 2 days ago, actually.
Yeah, incredible. Firstly, congratulations.
And thank you.
Secondly, how was that experience for you in terms of fitting that in with your current lifestyle as an athlete? And I guess, what does it mean to you? I'm assuming it's quite a big achievement, and and feeling of accomplishment?
For sure. I think I've always been someone who's placed a really, really high importance on education. That being said, in year 12, I turned down my spot on Junior Worlds to focus on school. I knew I wanted to get into physio, pre-med, and I needed a very good, it was called ATAR. So I needed a good mark and good score at the end of ATAR, the year to get into physio. And I mean, I got in and I got into pre-med and I did 2 years of it. Oh, sorry, not 2 years. Well, it's meant to be a four-year degree. So I was supposed to do 2 years, but the 2 years took me 5 years. And then I got halfway through and I thought, oh, I don't know if this is for me. I find the human body so fascinating and I really like the idea of helping people. I think as athletes and swimmers that we just take from everyone. We take people's time, people's energy, that sort of thing. So I think post-swimming, I'd always been really set on giving back. And I think as a physio, you're someone, you know, you're there to help people. So I think that was kind of why I initially went into it. But trying to manage physio and swimming just didn't really work, in particular when the uni I was at the time was very old school and no lectures were online. Like to do, even if I was doing one unit, I was in at uni 2 or 3 days a week and it just wasn't conducive to swimming. So I decided to study business. That being said, I had a business at the time, a dress hire business, which, I went to Shopfront, had 5 employees and, started from scratch and then sold it in 3 years. And it was the most incredible experience ever. So I know that I'm very business mindset. So, I changed to business, got my electives accounted for from physio and then chose a management as my major. And, that took me three years to do. And, I just finished on Wednesday.
Incredible. Congratulations. That's it's a massive achievement. Where do you see yourself in terms of what direction do you want to go in business-wise, I suppose, once you do end up finishing up swimming?
Look, I've always said that management consulting for like a big firm would sort of be where what I'm interested in. And I do think that's still where where my interests lie. In particular, I just want to work for a big firm and experience what it's like with hundreds of other employees. With swimming, it's a very, very small, my squad is huge compared to other squads. There's 20 of us, but I just want to be a number. I just want to be one in 500 people, employees. I just think it'd be such a different experience. And I just want to know what that 9-to-5 feels like. That being said, I do think I wouldn't be surprised if I start another business. And I mean, I'm always I'm a bit of a thinker, overthinker and thinker. So I'm starting to think about what I want to do. And I certainly think it will be along the helping and giving back sort of lines. Teaching people what I know, I think the online world is the way everyone's going. So whether it's online courses, ebooks, that sort of thing, mentoring sort of in the space of what I know about time management and goal setting and nutrition and sleep. And I just want to help people and teach people what I know and what skills that I've gained from pursuing a sporting career as well as finishing a degree.
Incredible. There's a number of people that come to mind that I'd love to introduce you to that I think would be great to connect with for down the track. But from the mindset or mental health perspective, is that something that you actively work on daily, whether it be through meditation or do you have some form of routine that you like to run through to work on the mindset side of things?
I think for me, meditation and I probably don't head down that path and haven't. But I think for me, journaling, goal setting, writing down practicing gratitude, that sort of thing is something that I put high importance on. I just think for me, in particular, goal setting is so big. And just almost keeping a log of not every day, but sort of across the week, how the week went, what did we do well? What did we not do well? What do we want to improve on for next week? And even when you start a new month, being what was good about month of September? What are we going to do for October? So I think things like that, I I find really beneficial, and that's sort of things that really help me.
Incredible. By the sounds of it, you're obviously a very extremely motivated and driven individual across basically anything that you put your hand to, which obviously is a big reason as to why you've been so successful. But I think I'm definitely super interested to continue on following along with your journey over these next 12 months. And I guess for the listeners, just before we wrap things up, what does that next 12 months look like for you? Obviously, we were chatting about it before we hit record, but in terms of training and stuff, how does that progress leading into, hopefully heading over to the Olympic Games again?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's kind of just a lot of hard work between now and June, and then, Olympic trials in June, and then hopefully I'll qualify for my third Olympics and then go to Paris. Compete there, and then I think after those games, provided everything goes to plan, I probably have some big decisions to make. I'll be taking a very extended break from the sport, just to decide where I want to be, what I want to do. Do I want to still pursue this? So I think, let my body and mind recover as well. But yeah, so for me, the end goal right now is Paris. Well, qualifying for Paris, and then I'm having a big European holiday.
Sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah.
Well, a massive good luck for the next 12 months all the way up until the qualifiers, and we'll stay in touch and obviously follow along with your journey, and I'll share with the audience when the time comes some links to keep up with your competition in the lead up to qualifiers and the world champs, and then hopefully Paris as well. But super grateful for your time today, Brianna, and I've really enjoyed it, and I'm looking forward to following along with your journey moving forward. So thanks so much for your time. If there's ever anything I can do to help you out, don't hesitate to let me know. But I'm sure the audience has really enjoyed this insight, and good luck.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me on.
Absolute pleasure. And for those who have enjoyed this episode, which I'm sure all of you have, we would love for you to share this one on your social media. So grab a screenshot of this episode, share on your story, send a link to the episode to a friend that would love this episode as well. Absolutely love your feedback and hearing from people listening to the show. And your support is always very much appreciated. So thanks so much. And look forward to chatting to you again on the Fitness and Lifestyle Podcast very soon.